Welcome to today's reading of the Midland Reporter-Telegram and the Odessa American, read by volunteers and staff. You can hear this program on Recording Library of West Texas Radio and on demand at recordinglibrary.org.
Hello, I'm Jesse. I'm reading from the Midland Reporter-Telegram for Thursday, October 22nd. Pioneer Parsley merger driven by need to generate cash flow. Market realizes Permian is world's premier oil basin, Pioneer Executive Vice President says. The story was written by Mella McEwen. In its $4.5 billion, $7.6 billion including debt, all-stock acquisition of Parsley Energy, Pioneer Natural Resources wasn't seeking additional drilling locations or economies of scale. Quote, "The driver in this is being able to continue our free cash flow model for shareholders," Mark Berg, Pioneer Executive Vice President, told the Reporter-Telegram in a phone interview. Pioneer has an estimated 30 years of potential drilling locations, but Berg said the Parsley addition grows its size and scale and gives it the flexibility, quote, "of a large asset base in the Permian Basin, and is a good move for us in this economic environment," end quote. A transition team is being formed to help merge the two companies and determine the fate of local employees and the office locations of both companies. Berg said, quote, "Midland is still the heart and soul of Pioneer and will continue to be," end quote. Andrew Dittmar, senior M&A analyst for market research with Enverus, told the Reporter-Telegram by email, quote, "This is part of a historic winnowing of U.S.-based independent E&P companies. There has now been over $40 billion in public-public corporation mergers year-to-date. In just 2 days, we have seen two of the top 10 U.S.-based E&P acquisitions of the last 10 years, amounting to over $20 billion in combined value. Quote, "Unlike some corporate deals we have seen for Pioneer, adding inventory isn't a particular concern, given its massive runway that amounts to nearly 30 years of drilling at expected rig rates," he said. "Instead, the company is looking to bolster free cash flow metrics as it builds around a sustainable reinvestment rate of 65% to 75% that prioritizes getting cash back to shareholders," end quote. The Pioneer-Parsley combination came a day after ConocoPhillips agreed to acquire Midland's Contro Resources in another all-stock deal. Both deals focused on Permian Basin assets. Quote, "The reason you're seeing these combinations focused on the Permian Basin is the market realizes the Permian Basin is the premier oil basin, not just in the U.S., but in the world," Berg said. "At this time, companies are looking to build the best assets and best positions. That's why you're seeing the Parsley and Concho transactions," end quote. In the current economic environment of low commodity prices and investor and consumer disdain for the industry, maintaining low break-even costs and producing oil in an environmentally responsible way will be important for producers, he said. Quote, "What will let a company have a sustainable future is a low-cost structure and a focus on environmental responsibility and running a clean company," Berg said. That was one thing Parsley brings to the merger. Both companies are recognized for the commitment to best-in-class environmental, social, and governance practices, he said. That includes making the mitigation, if not outright elimination, of flaring and emissions a priority. Berg said the combination of the two companies will be highly accretive to cash flow and already $325 million in annual savings. Quote, "We're going to focus on execution and synergies to make this successful," Berg said. "We want to make this successful not just for Pioneer, but for the community," end quote. Freshwater District opposes city's plan for saltwater disposal at T-Bar Ranch. The story was written by Caitlin Randall. After the Midland City Council approved negotiating a contract for commercial saltwater disposal at T-Bar Ranch, the chairman of the Midland County Freshwater Supply District said he would, quote, under no circumstances support a commercial disposal site near the city's water source. The city of Midland purchased land at Winkler County's T-Bar Ranch in 1965, then developed a water field and completed a $200 million 67-mile pipeline in 2013 to support water to city residents. Jose Cuevas, chairman of the Freshwater District, said in an interview on Tuesday all that the effort could be wasted if contaminated water infiltrates the city's water supply. Quote, there's always the possibility that something goes wrong, he said. He said he's been told there's a 5% chance of an accident if the project moves forward, and he feels even a 1% chance would be too much of a gamble to play with Midland's water source. Cuevas said his main concern about the city's plans is that they would allow commercial saltwater disposal. He said oil and gas companies that are drilling at the site are already permitted to inject their saltwater waste, but a commercial designation would allow a company to transport and dispose of waste from other companies. With the implementation of saltwater disposal wells comes the possibility of contamination from hydrogen sulfide and other irritants, Cuevas said. Quote, I understand that if H2S gets into water, you can't really stop it because it feeds on itself, he said. Cuevas also said he found it odd that the city would be considering a commercial saltwater disposal site near its water supply when commercial disposal is not permitted within city limits. City Council members on October 6th unanimously approved a resolution to award a contract and begin negotiations for the project. The Freshwater District doesn't have any say in the project. Its only input is in the facility and pipeline that provides the city's water, Cuevas said. Still, he said he hopes the City Council will, quote, make the right decision. Quote, is the money really worth the risk, he said. Couple who were confronted by BLM protesters visit Odessa. Mark and Patricia McCloskey are campaigning for Trump. The story was written by Caitlin Randall. Mark and Patricia McCloskey, the St. Louis couple who went viral after a confrontation with Black Lives Matter protesters, came to Odessa on Wednesday to campaign for President Trump. The personal injury lawyers gained notoriety in June following video of them pointing guns at protesters who were marching through their gated community. They spoke at the Ector County Republican Women's Luncheon Wednesday about that experience and their decision to travel the country advocating for Trump. Quote, the reason we're on this stage is because we've had an up-close and personal view of what the government will be like if Joe Biden becomes president, Mark McCloskey told members of the Ector County Republican Women gathered at the Odessa Marriott. In an interview, he said they were inspired to campaign for Trump after watching his speech at Mount Rushmore, where he spoke about Marxist extremism among Democrats in the U.S. Quote, I said to Patty, and she said to me, we'll just clear our calendars off, McCloskey said. We'll do everything we can to get the president reelected, end quote. He said they haven't returned to their law practice since the June 28th incident because they're committed to campaigning for Republicans through Election Day. McCloskey denied media reports that he previously supported Democratic politicians, although Federal Election Commission records show he has donated to candidates on both sides of the aisle. He also distanced himself from a statement released by their attorney the day after the incident that said the couple support the Black Lives Matter movement and message. Quote, I've never changed my opinion on Black Lives Matter, but I have changed my lawyer, McCloskey said. I've never supported Black Lives Matter. They stand for everything that is the antithetical of what I believe in, end quote. Mark and Patricia McCloskey were indicted by a grand jury earlier this month on felony charges of unlawful use of a weapon and tampering with evidence. Prosecutors alleged the pair tampered with the firearm Patricia McCloskey brandished that day to make it appear the pistol was unusable. However, Mark McCloskey said Wednesday the handgun was a prop the couple used in a 2014 lawsuit against the manufacturer and had been disabled since that trial. Quote, Patty knew nothing about firearms and picked that gun up out of the drawer knowing it was not a functional gun, but knowing it was something that looked like a functional gun, hoping that the intimidation value was enough, he said. The McCloskey said they continued to receive threats and hate mail months after the June confrontation. They said what they describe as, quote, 300 to 500 members of an angry mob marching on a private street is something that will continue if Biden and vice presidential candidate Kamala Harris are elected. Quote, this is not just a singular incident that happened to us, but we promise that this is coming to a neighborhood near you, Patricia McCloskey said. Quote, if Donald Trump makes a couple tweets that offend you slightly, you need to grow up and get past that because our country is at stake, end quote.
Hello, this is Michael, continuing with additional articles from the Midland Reporter-Telegram, Thursday, October 22nd. Planning and Zoning approves plans for stripped-down Hillcrest Village by Mella McEwen. Hillcrest Village, the affordable housing development proposed by the Midland Community Development Corporation, was before the Planning and Zoning Commission on Monday. This time, the proposal was radically different from the proposed 200-unit apartment complex of affordable apartments targeted at teachers and first responders. Instead, in requesting a zone change from MF-16, Multiple Family Dwelling District, to PD, Planned District for Housing Development at Princeton and Midland Drive, the MCDC unveiled a much more streamlined plan. Instead of the 200-unit complex, the proposal is for 90 single-family housing units, a mixture of single-family homes and townhouses. The plat shows space for 5 lots meeting requirements for SF2, 63 meeting the dimensions for SF3, and 22 that meet the lot dimensions for townhomes. One common area is also platted, along with road access from Cuthbert Avenue and from Princeton Avenue. David Diaz, executive director of MCDC, told the planning and zoning commissioners that markets had changed amid the current economic downturn, and it felt this would be a better use of the property. It would be affordable housing, defined by the city as homes costing $200,000 or less, with some buyers needing down payment assistance and others able to pay market price. He said the houses would be well-built homes with brick, limestone, or stucco facades and fences. PNZ Chairman Reggie Lawrence was concerned about the option of either one-car or two-car garages, given the strong opposition to the earlier apartment complex, which drew an overflow crowd of opponents when it went before the commission in November. He said he wanted to ensure that when a new community, such as Hillcrest, is placed within an older community, all steps were taken to ensure it fit in and the developers discussed every concern with residents. Commission member Chase Gardafi said, "We can't require so many things and still expect them to build and provide affordable homes. That's what they do. And so I think a little leniency on their behalf will allow them to provide something people can live in and live in for a long time because they can afford it regardless of whether the economy is booming or in a downturn." Residents speaking at the hearing told commissioners they were pleased the developer had listened to their pleas for single-family homes instead of an apartment complex, but had questions about where the additional water would come from, since most of them received their water from wells. They were told the city would be providing water and sewer services to the lots in the development. They were also reassured that the homes would be sold, not rented, so buyers would be more likely to put down roots in the community. Diaz said development would most likely come in 2 phases as demand required, with roads and sidewalks built alongside homes. The request was approved by a 5-2 vote with requirements that increased rear yard setbacks to 20 feet in case a 2-story home was built and the option of 1 or 2-car garages. If a home buyer opts for a one-car garage, the developer must provide an additional off-street parking space. Also on Monday, commissioners approved by unanimous vote a request by Patrick Brown on behalf of Thriving United for a zone change from AE, Agriculture Estate in part, and PD, Plan District for Housing Development, to PD, Plan Development for a housing development on three lots at 3801 Arapahoe Road and 6611 and 6709 Elkins Road for the Angel Haven Village, a recovery residence village. The village will provide homes in a village community to assist those recovering from addiction and concurrent psychiatric issues. The first phase will consist of 45,177 square feet of living space to house up to 40 adults and their children. This phase will be four-bedroom homes, 2 3-bedroom homes, and 2 2-bedroom homes for 16 single moms and their children. There also is planned 2 4-bedroom homes, 3 3-bedroom homes, and 7 2-bedroom homes for single dads and two-parent families and their children. In the second phase, 57,700 square feet of living space would be added to house up to 52 adults and their children. 8 4-bedroom, 4 3-bedroom, and 4 2-bedroom homes would house 32 single moms and their children. There also would be 2 4-bedroom, 5 3-bedroom, and 3 2-bedroom homes to house single dads and two-parent families and their children. Planned amenities include a greenhouse and community garden, petting zoo, playground, volleyball court, and playing field. Existing buildings on the property would be used as a community meeting hall, recreation hall, and dining hall. Future amenities could include a swimming pool and splash pad. Commissioners unanimously approved a request by Jesse Melendez for a specific use designation without term for a mobile food vendor park at 3818 West Wall Street, the site of a former car dealership. The front of the property will have parking for customers, while the rear portion of the lot will have vendor parking, and the center will have 2,250 square feet of tables and seating. The existing 4,200 square foot building will be available only to provide a women's restroom and a men's restroom. There will also be porta potties on site. Hours are expected to be 7 a.m. to 10 p.m. Tuesday through Sunday. Commissioners also approved a preliminary plat of 2 lots at Linda Vita Drive and Nueva Vista Circle. Schumann Engineering requested the replat to turn the 2 lots into 4. Aaron Burrell and Services also received approval of its replat of a lot at East Golf Course Road and Elkins Road into 9 lots. Pioneer donates land to Bush Tennis Center for new facility by J.C. Lewis. Pioneer Natural Resources on Wednesday donated 3 acres of land to the Bush Tennis Center for planned expansion of its athletic facility. The Bush ACE, Advise, Counsel, Encourage Athletic Center was announced on the heels of the opening of Chris Davidson Opportunity Park, which is adjacent to the tennis center. The athletic center will include 5 indoor basketball courts, a 50-yard indoor turf field, and a high-performance training and fitness center. Bush Tennis Center Executive Director Tim Stallard said he is excited about expanded partnerships with the University of Texas Permian Basin in the athletics, kinesiology, and health sciences departments, Baylor and Texas A&M athletics, and soon to include Texas Christian University. This is a new opportunity for Bush Tennis Center to expand with our new Bush ACE Athletic Center, he said. The concept here will provide state-of-the-art, high-performance training for athletes throughout the Permian Basin. Stallard said Pioneer Natural Resources has been part of the Bush Tennis Center since its inception. Daniel Pinder, Service and Land Manager for Pioneer Natural Resources, said Wednesday the company has given over $1.2 million since 2011 through various projects and initiatives. The 3 acres are valued at $520,000, he said. During these trying times, it feels great to give back to the community, he said. Something that is really great for the community is the expansion of the facility and having a place to go play basketball indoors and have kids develop themselves. Pender, who is originally from Midland, said he remembers the Midlander Building, which was a sports facility constructed in 1982. Growing up in this town, we always had the Midlander, or something like that, to play in. Something big. And this is going to be something like that, he said. It will be cool for the community and the youth. The first step is putting a committee together for the project and funding it through donations and private investor funds, Stallard said. Sturgeon Construction and AS Design Studio will serve as the general contractor and design consultants for the new facility. The Westlake Athletic Community Center Management Group in Austin will serve as a management and operations consultant. He said that Lance Hooten, founder of Hooten Sports Performance Training and one of the best trainers in the United States, is set to come to Midland to offer his expertise for programming and giving athletes the best edge. Oil man Jim Henry, who donated the land for the Bush Tennis Center, said it started with his friend Luis Valdez in 1994 when Valdez was trying to find a place to teach tennis to kids who didn't have a lot of money for training. Valdez did an outreach program through Casa de Amigos until the Bush Tennis Center was opened in 2013, Henry said. We're trying to keep young kids on the court and out of court, he said. We want them to have something to do that will keep them busy and out of mischief. If kids get interested in tennis, they will be in good physical shape and their mind will be in better shape. He said, it feels great to watch the center continue to expand.
Here are some local news briefs. Northside Walmart closes temporarily for sanitizing, restocking. Midland's Northside Walmart store closed Wednesday afternoon and is set to remain closed until Friday morning as part of protocol to protect employees and customers against COVID-19. Because of a spike in coronavirus cases, Walmart has chosen to take a proactive step to temporarily close the store at 4517 Midland Drive, beginning at 6 p.m. Wednesday until 7 a.m. Friday, company spokesman Ann Hatfield said in an email to the Reporter Telegram. The closure was part of a company-initiated program and will allow extra time for a third-party specialist to further sanitize the store and for associates to restock the shelves, she said. Quote, as health officials work to curb the impact of this pandemic, we want to be a part of the solution to help keep our stores clean for our associates and customers, she said in the release. Quote, everything we're doing is for the well-being of our associates and customers and in consideration of guidance by the Centers for Disease Control and Health experts, she said. When the store reopens on Friday, the protocol will continue of daily health screenings and temperature checks of every associate before every shift and providing masks and gloves to associates. Other measures in place to protect associates and customers are requirement that masks be worn in the store, enhanced cleaning measures, installing social distancing signage, installing plexiglass sneeze guards at registers, and providing no-touch payment methods. Quote, we continue working closely with health officials and adjusting how we serve the community while also keeping the health and safety of our customers and associates in mind, she said. Three people, including a nine-month-old girl, died Tuesday morning in a four-vehicle wreck in Ector County, according to a press release from the Texas Department of Public Safety. Odessan Marlene A. Olivas, age 25, was driving a GMC Terrain southbound on Farm to Market Road 181, and a 32-year-old Santa Teresa, New Mexico man was driving a Ford F-250 northbound on FM 181. A 53-year-old Odessa man was driving a Kenworth truck tractor towing a trailer behind the Ford pickup, and Glenn Juarez, age 30, of El Paso, was driving a Chevrolet Silverado behind the truck. Olivas crossed the center stripe and entered the northbound lane, driving on the wrong side of the road, according to the release. She sideswiped the Ford pickup and the truck and hit the Silverado head-on. Olivas, her passenger, Magdali Olivas, 9 months old, and Juarez died at the scene, according to the release. The Ford driver, his passenger, and the truck driver were not injured. Marlene Olivas and Juarez were not wearing seatbelts. The wreck occurred around 7:15 a.m. Tuesday, 4 miles north of Goldsmith.
Health Department reports third straight 100-case day. from staff reports. For the third straight day, the Midland Health Department reported more than 100 coronavirus cases inside Midland County. The number of cases announced Wednesday brings the total this week up to 325, which is already the most in 1 week since August 2nd through the 8th, 414, and puts the county on pace to break its weekly record for cases, 418 set in late July. The spike reported is more than 150 greater than during the first 3 days last week, 171. There have been 4,771 cases during the pandemic. Wednesday's new cases are reflective of lab results from Monday and Tuesday, according to the health department. The health department recorded 1,725 active cases, an increase of 99 compared to Tuesday, and 2,708 recoveries, an increase of 5. The number of COVID-19-related deaths in Midland County stayed at 89. Midland Reporter-Telegram Opinion, Thursday, October 22nd. Opinion Extra, residents can get involved in selection of next superintendent. The frustrating thing about a school superintendent search is that members of the community do not know the people district leaders are interviewing and what is being said in those interviews. It isn't a transparent process, and there isn't much that can be done about it. Search firms and other experts will tell board members that their slate of candidates will not be what it could be if a search is as open as we would like it to be. They say that a potential candidate won't want his or her home district or current employer knowing he or she is interviewing. It is probably unrealistic to think that any board member, current or future, would want to limit what is the most important decision they will make as an elected representative. That is one reason that during the recent Reporter Telegram Facebook forums, we asked Midland ISD board candidates what specific questions they plan to ask superintendent candidates if they get the chance to interview. Again, community participation is limited, so when there is opportunity for participation, whether it is a superintendent search or a bond forum, the community should take advantage of that. Three meetings are planned to give residents a chance to offer their input. The meetings are 11:30 a.m. Tuesday at Bowie Fine Arts Academy Auditorium, 5:30 p.m. Tuesday at the Midland High School Library, and 5:30 p.m. November 9th at Lee High School Auditorium. These meetings will allow board members, current and future, to hear from you and what you want. Do you think that the future of the district should revolve around charter schools? Let them know. Do you believe that more autonomy should go to principals and campus leadership? Let them know. Do you think the culture is lacking inside Midland ISD? Let them know. Do you believe that the next superintendent should have particular ties to the area or a background in academic reform, the latter of which we have not seen in at least the past two superintendents? Again, let them know. This is your opportunity to be part of the conversation. Take advantage of it. The community is also invited to provide feedback via a survey that can be found at midlandisd.net/search. We can all agree that the process isn't going to be as most of us would like it, but that isn't the point here. The point is that our board needs to know what you want in a superintendent, whether we are talking about more transparency, communication, experience in reform, school choice options at the secondary level, or experience dealing with a community that is as unusual as Midland. We can still hold the board accountable in the future, but we don't have the same ability with the superintendent. We do know the ramifications of selecting the wrong superintendent can last for more than a decade. You want to be engaged in issues that matter? Here is your chance. Are you going to make the most of it? By editor Stuart Doreen, S-D-O-R-E-E-N at HEARSTNP.com.
Hello, this is April reading the Midland Reporter Telegram for Thursday, October 22, 2020. Trinity Speaker Series. Julie Lithcott-Hames talks to representatives from Midland ISD, University of Texas Permian Basin, Bynum School, Midland Classical Academy, Trinity School, and Hillcrest School about the dangers of helicopter parenting Friday at Midland Country Club. The event was the Sweetie and Hal Clay Peck Speaker Series, which is hosted annually by Trinity. Lithcott-Hames is a former dean at Stanford University and author of How to Raise an Adult. Early voting continues. Early voting for the November 3 general election continues through October 30 at 5 voting centers across Midland. County Annex, 2110 North A Street, through Friday, 8 a.m. to 5 p.m., Saturday, 7 a.m. to 7 p.m., Sunday, 1 to 6 p.m. Calvary Assembly of God, 908 Johnston Street, MCPL Centennial Branch, 2503 West Loop 250 North, Fairmont Park Church of Christ, 3818 North Midland Drive, St. Paul's Methodist Church, 4501 Thomason Drive, through Friday, 8 a.m. to 5 p.m., Saturday, 8 a.m. to 6 p.m., Sunday, 1 to 6 p.m. Early voting totals, Monday, 3,509, Tuesday, 3,612, Wednesday, 3,160, October 13, 3,259, October 14, 3,330, October 15, 3,399, October 16, 3,780, mail-in ballots, 2,715, total, 26,764. Early voting through 7 days, 2008, 15,280, 2012, 16,622, 2016, 23,096. MCPL to host Fall Festival Pumpkin Decorating Contest. Midland County Public Library is hosting a drive-through trunk-or-treat Fall Festival 4 to 6 p.m. Saturday at the downtown branch. Decorated trunks and tables will line the parking lot. Families should enter from Missouri Avenue, remain in their cars as they drive through the festival, and exit on Big Spring Street. Also, MCPL is accepting entries into its Literary Pumpkin Contest. Midlanders of all ages may enter a pumpkin decorated as a book character. Participants should not carve the pumpkins, according to a press release from the library. The deadline for entries is noon Friday. They may be dropped off at either branch. Winners in four age categories, 4 to 7, 8 to 12, 13 through 17, and adult, will be announced via Facebook Live at the beginning of the festival. Prizes include gift certificates from Domino's Pizza, Fiddlesticks Farms, Museum of the Southwest, and Whataburger. MC to host FAFSA Workshop. Midland College will host a workshop designed to assist students with the financial aid application process and the free application for federal student aid form, FAFSA. The workshop will be held 9 a.m. Saturday at the Cogdell Learning Center, 201 West Florida Avenue. Students participating in the workshop should bring the following: Social Security and driver's license numbers, students' or parents' 2019 tax records, records of any untaxed income, such as child support, interest income, veterans' non-education benefits, records of assets, such as savings and checking accounts, stocks and bonds, real estate, other than the home in which family lives, and alien registration number, if applicable. The workshop is free and open to the public. However, due to social distancing requirements, students may only bring one person with them. Face masks are required. For more information, contact Josie Sam McGee at 432-686-4903 or email jsamagueye@midland.edu. Health Department is providing services. The Midland Health Department is providing clinical services by appointment only. Appointments will be scheduled from 8:15 a.m. to 3:45 p.m. Monday through Friday. To schedule an appointment, call 681-7613. When it's open, Midland County Public Library, 9 a.m. to 6 p.m. Monday through Friday, 10 a.m. to 2 p.m. Saturday. Curbside pickup at Downtown Branch, 11 a.m. to 4 p.m. Monday through Friday.
Here are some obituaries that appeared in the Midland Reporter-Telegram on Thursday, October 22nd. Addison Stewart Barker, age 91, of Midland, passed away peacefully in his home on October 15th. He was born July 22nd, 1929, to Birchley Kilmer Barker and Walter Ross Long. He was preceded in death by his parents and brother B.K. Barker. Addison is survived by his wife, Pat Barker, daughter Shelley Copeland and husband Roger, son Brent Barker and wife Vanessa of Frisco, Texas, and by 5 grandchildren and 2 great-grandchildren. Due to COVID, a private graveside service will be held. The family wants to express their gratitude to Hospice of Midland and to Texas Home Health. In lieu of flowers, please direct memorial donations to Hospice of Midland, 911 West Texas Street, Midland, Texas, 79701, or to the American Parkinson Disease Association. Arrangements are under the direction of Nellie Pickle and Welch Funeral Home and Crematory of Midland. Online condolences may be made at www.npwelch.com. Carmen Urias Orozco, Jr. passed away Monday, October 19th, in Brownfield, Texas. Rosary will be recited on Friday, October 23rd, at 7 p.m. at Nellie Pickle and Welch Funeral Home Chapel. Funeral Mass will be held at 10 a.m. Saturday, October 24th, at St. Stephen's Catholic Church, located at 4601 Neely Avenue in Midland. Carmen was born on February 19, 1946, at the Hershey Ranch in Big Lake, Texas, to Carmen T. Orozco and Eva Jimenez Urias. Carmen is survived by Carmen W. Trey and wife Karen Orozco, Michael and wife Cherry Orozco, Sandy and husband Mike Crawford, and Chris Orozco. Sisters Nellie Hansen, Amparo and husband Arnaldo Sines, sisters-in-law Vicky and Ken Gidney and Tina Gregg, brothers-in-law Dr. Neville Trey Williams, Kirk and wife Cindy Williams. He is also survived by 8 grandchildren and 2 great-grandchildren. He's also survived by many nieces, nephews, great-nieces, nephews, and cousins also survive him. Carmen is preceded in death by his father, Carmen T. Orozco, and his mother, Eva Jimenez Urias, and his sister, Lydia U. Carlson. Arrangements are under the direction of Nellie Pickle and Welch Funeral Home and Crematory in Midland. Online condolences may be made at www.npwelch.com. Drusilla Reed Houston, age 90, of Midland, passed away on October 19th. She was born August 18, 1930, to the late Leonard Brown and Amy Burns Brown in Mahia, Texas. She is survived by her children, Gloria Aldridge, Shirley Burgess, Audrey Taylor, Jimmy Reed, and Albert Reed, all of Midland. When last counted, she is survived by 161 grandchildren and great-grandchildren. She is preceded in death by her parents, first husband Reed, second husband Eddie Houston, and her children Josie Reed and Billy Reed. Viewing will be held Thursday from 9 a.m. to 5 p.m. at Avalos Sanchez and Thomas Funeral Home Chapel. Funeral service will be held Friday, October 23rd at Goodwill Baptist Church at 1 p.m. Interment will follow at Fairview Cemetery. Services are in care of Avalos Sanchez and Thomas Funeral Home and Chapel. Helen R. Collier, age 98, of Midland, passed away October 17th. She was born in Pelham, Texas, on January 5th, 1922, to the late David Ray and Cora Carruthers Ray. She is survived by her daughter, Gloria Robinson of Midland, as well as many grandchildren. A viewing will be held on Thursday, October 22nd, from 6 to 8 p.m. at Avalos Sanchez and Thomas Funeral Home Chapel. Funeral services will be Friday, October 23rd, at the Lee Street Church of Christ at 10 a.m., with burial immediately following at the Serenity Memorial Gardens. Funeral arrangements are entrusted to Avalos Sanchez and Thomas Funeral Home. K. Carlene Golson, age 87, of San Angelo, died Tuesday, October 20th, at her residence surrounded by her loved ones. The family will host a visitation from 6 p.m. to 8 p.m. Friday, October 23rd, at Stephen's Funeral Home Chapel at 400 West Pecan Street in Coleman. A graveside funeral service will be at 11 a.m. Saturday, October 24th, at the Burkitt Cemetery Pavilion. Interment will follow in the Burkitt Cemetery. Services are entrusted to Stephen's Funeral Home in Coleman. She was born K. Carlene Rose on August 27, 1933, in Abilene, to Hardy Murray Rose and Georgia Maxine Kirby Rose. Kay is joined in heaven by her parents and by her husband, C.W. Pete Golson, and her son, Gary Mack Golson. She is survived by her sons, Murray Wade Golson and wife Angela of Rankin, and Rendell King Golson and wife Kim of San Angelo. She's also survived by her grandchildren and her brother, Larry Rose, and wife Kathy of Coleman, along with numerous nieces, nephews, and cousins. The family would like to thank the staff of St. Gabriel's Hospice in San Angelo for the wonderful love and care that they gave Kay in her final days. Memorials are suggested in memory of Kay to the Mercy Ships Organization, Post Office Box 1930, Garden Valley, Texas, 79771, or at www.mercyships.org. Remembrances, condolences, and messages of comfort can be expressed to the family at www.livingmemorials.com. To protect each other from COVID-19 infection, we ask that you comply with CDC social distancing guidelines, as well as Governor Greg Abbott's request that a face covering be utilized. Funerals are currently a public event being held during the national response in the COVID-19 pandemic. When you attend any public event, you are acknowledging risk of exposure. C.G. Langley, age 90, of Midland, passed away October 19th. Viewing will be from 1 p.m. to 9 p.m. Sunday, October 25th, at Nally Pickle and Welch Funeral Home in Midland. Graveside service will be held at 1 p.m. Monday, October 26th, at Resthaven Memorial Park. Survivors include children Carla Williams, John Langley, and Joe Langley. Arrangements are under the direction of Nally Pickle and Welch Funeral Home and Crematory of Midland. Online condolences may be made at www.npwelch.com. Dolores Marie Meek, age 86, of Midland, passed away October 16th. Funeral service will be held at 2 p.m. Saturday, October 24th, at Grace Lutheran Church in Midland, with burial following at Resthaven Memorial Park. Arrangements are under the direction of Nally Pickle and Welch Funeral Home and Crematory of Midland. Online condolences may be made at www.npwelch.com. Francis Ellis, age 84, of Midland, passed away October 20th. The family will receive guests from 6 p.m. to 8 p.m. Thursday, October 22nd, at Nally Pickle and Welch Funeral Home in Midland. Graveside service will be held at 11 a.m. Friday, October 23rd, at Resthaven Memorial Park. Arrangements are under the direction of Nally Pickle and Welch Funeral Home and Crematory of Midland. Online condolences may be made at www.npwelch.com.
Hello, this is Michael. I'm reading the Odessa American for Thursday, October 22nd, 2020. Front page. ECISD teachers and counselors raise concerns. Teachers and counselors expressed concerns to Ector County ISD board members about the timeliness of being notified of COVID-19 cases, classrooms with too many students, the risk of being around younger students with no masks, and other items. The worries were voiced during the public comment section of the regular meeting Tuesday. Javier Ruiz, president of the local chapter of the Texas State Teachers Association, said with cases rising locally and more students coming to campus, the risk is increasing. Bringing back more students now is not safe when the positive cases are on the rise, Ruiz said. Ruiz also voiced concern about Senate Bill 1882, which allows districts to partner with charter organizations. He said charter schools don't perform as well as traditional schools. They don't have to accept all students, and the dropout rate is higher. Melanie Sheehan, a counselor, said she has served as a sounding board for teachers the last 10 weeks. The main concerns are lack of social distancing, the classrooms being too small to social distance, students not being required to wear masks from pre-kindergarten through third grade, and having to wear masks and face shields. Students are having a hard time hearing teachers with masks and shields, and teachers wondered if they could just wear one. Teachers also wanted to be kept informed of positive COVID cases in real time. Sheehan said there is also no consistent cleaning of classrooms, and teachers are given one spray bottle and told to use brown towels. Sheehan noted that this is a difficult time for teachers, and they need grace. They are teaching online and in person with no appreciation. Bowie Middle School social studies teacher Sheena Salcido said decisions for COVID protocols have been left to the campuses, and each one has its own rules and its own expectations for virtual learners. Salcido said some campuses are staff-centered and some are micromanaged, and that teachers are being told the six-foot distance is a guideline. Salcido encouraged board members to reach out to teachers and learn about their anxieties. Superintendent Scott Murray indicated that he didn't know about the concerns, and Board President Delma Avalos requested that they be listed in writing for him. Murray said as soon as they are notified about a positive test, whether it's a student or staff member, they do contact tracing, and the affected person is advised to quarantine. Cases are reported daily on the ECISD dashboard found on the website. "We don't mind telling anybody. We actually want people to know if they've been exposed," Murray said, "so they can react quickly and the student or staff member can be immediately quarantined," Murray said. Emergency cleaning also is initiated. Texas Education Agency guidelines say 6 feet or whatever is feasible, Murray said. He added that the state knows classrooms are different sizes. "We depend upon the schools to make these decisions. I see classes out in hallways so teachers and kids can spread out," Murray said. He noted that campuses are using cafeterias and gymnasiums to spread students out. "At the end of the day, when a lot of our kids are showing up every day, we don't have 6 feet in all locations. We're not required to do that," Murray said. "Masks are required for 4th through 12th grade students, and face shields and masks are required for teachers when they're around students." He said the cases the district sees don't come from within the district. They have come from family members passing it on to each other, for example. "We don't have examples of school spread. That's why we contact trace every day. Our community is fragile as it is right now, and we don't want to contribute to an increase in cases," Murray said. He added that he still meets on Wednesdays with Odessa College and University of Texas Permian Basin, along with those from the county, city, and hospitals. The board also conducted a public hearing on financial accountability. Chief Financial Officer Deborah Otmers presented the first Financial Integrity Rating System of Texas report for 2019-2020. The data is based on financial data from 2018 to 2019. ECISD earned a superior rating equivalent to a grade of A. Its score was 100 out of 100. Created by the 76th Texas Legislature in 2001, FIRST is designed to encourage public schools to better manage their financial resources to provide the maximum allocation possible for direct instructional purposes. The FIRST ratings are calculated using 15 financial indicators, such as administrative cost expenditures, the accuracy of a district or charter's financial information submitted to the Texas Education Agency, and any financial vulnerabilities or material weaknesses in internal controls as determined by an external auditor. In other business, the board voted 7-0 to approve budget amendment number 4. The amendment reflects a loss of revenue from lower student enrollment, but that is offset by the closing of vacant positions that are not going to be filled this year. Voted 7-0 to approve purchases over $50,000. Items on this list are electronic signs for campuses, additional janitorial services — the custodial department is fully staffed right now — and the external auditor contract. Voted 7-0 to approve a waiver of the requirement of medical certification need for COVID-19 leave. Board Policy DEC Local requires that an employee submit medical certification of the need for leave if the employee is absent more than 5 consecutive workdays because of personal illness. Due to the COVID-19 pandemic, it was requested that ECISD not require medical certification of the need for leave if the employee is absent for more than 5 consecutive workdays because of personal illness, if the absence is due to any of the following conditions. The employee is out due to COVID-19 illness. The employee is out due to COVID-19 symptoms until a negative test or alternative diagnosis is received. The employee is out due to COVID-19 exposure, the recap said. Voted 7-0 to approve a waiver of teacher certification. The teacher certification waiver can be used for an individual to teach in an area he or she is not certified to teach. It can also be used for individuals who are not certified but have qualifications to teach and are carefully vetted. The teacher certification waiver must be approved by the board and the Commissioner of Education. The waiver does not apply to special education, bilingual, or ESL assignments. Approval must be granted each year. Along that line, trustees heard a presentation from the Human Capital Department. The presentation began with the announcement that ECISD has been selected as one of just 2 school districts, Dallas ISD being the other, chosen to take part in the Urban Schools Human Capital Academy, which will be funded by the Texas Education Agency. ECISD's Human Capital Department has 2 arms: Human Resources, that hires and establishes policies and processes, and Talent Development, that is responsible for professional growth and developing pipelines to grow our employees' capacity. Protecting Their Rights, St. Louis Couple Headline Sold Out Event, by Federico Martinez. Some Americans will become targets of violence by civil rights advocates and lose their right to protect themselves with guns if Democrat Joe Biden is elected president. That was the nightmare scenario described by Mark and Patricia Miklowski, a St. Louis couple facing multiple felony charges for brandishing guns at protesters walking by their home in June. The McCloskeys, who recently pleaded not guilty to the charges, were featured speakers during the Ector County Republican Women's Monthly Luncheon held at the Odessa Marriott Hotel and Conference Center on Wednesday. More than 350 people attended the sold-out event. "These protesters don't believe in peaceful protests," Mark McCloskey said. "They want to bring violence and looting to our peaceful neighborhoods, to the suburbs. We'll be fighting for our lives." If Sleepy Joe and Kamala Harris are elected, they're going to do away with the Second Amendment, and we won't be able to own a gun to protect ourselves. McCloskey said, far-left-wing liberals like Biden and Harris want to eliminate the rights of Americans. "I've been reading White Fragility and Critical Race Theory," McCloskey said. "The plan is to redefine racism. They want everyone to be treated equal, rather than give everyone the opportunity to pull themselves up by their bootstraps. The plan would be unfair to people who've had to work hard and earn what they have," he said. McCloskey said the only way to prevent this attack is to make sure President Donald Trump is reelected. "Some people complain that Trump can be crude when he speaks," McCloskey said. "I say, get over it, grow up. This is our life." "Trump will also protect all Americans' right to own guns," he said. "We have the right to defend ourselves. It's a right guaranteed to us by God," said Mark McCloskey, who quoted parts of the U.S. Constitution to back up his claim. The McCloskeys, who are both attorneys, garnered national attention after protesters walked through the gated community of Portland Place on June 28th, as Mark McCloskey pointed an AR-15 rifle at them while his wife waved a semi-automatic handgun, placing protesters in fear of injury, according to charging documents. The death of George Floyd, an African-American man, at the hands of Minneapolis police, sparked outrage and protests and riots throughout the country. Several hundred protesters were marching to the home of St. Louis Mayor Linda Crewson when they were confronted by the McCloskeys, who lived in the same gated neighborhood. In July, the Circuit Attorney's Office charged the McCloskeys with 1 count each of unlawful exhibiting of a weapon, and a grand jury in early October added a charge of evidence tampering. The couple pleaded not guilty to the charges on October 14th during a hearing. The evidence tampering charge alleges that the couple altered the pistol held by Patricia McCloskey, which the couple's attorney has said was inoperable. Mark Mikulski on Wednesday claimed investigators took the pistol and fixed it and now are trying to frame his wife. The couple said they armed themselves because protesters were threatening them and they feared for their lives. During his speech, Mikulski shared that his family has continued to receive death threats by several African Americans who they know and others who are leaders in the Black Lives Matter movement. The Mikulski said their decision to arm themselves and confront the protesters was not race-related. Race never entered into it, Patricia Mikulski said. Many of the protesters were white. Mark Mikulski added, "We have clients who are black. We had no concept of race being involved. When people started trying to tie it to racism, I was shocked." Press Cafe Gives Back in Big Way by Michael Bauer. The coronavirus has disrupted numerous fundraisers around the community, one of which was Pink the Basin's signature luncheon event this year. The team at Press Cafe found a way to step in and help out by hosting its inaugural Dine and Donate Week. The event took place last week, where everything ordered was completely paid for by the Sewell family of companies. In exchange, customers were asked to give a donation to Pink the Basin in the amount of what their meal would have cost or more. "We got together as a team and thought of ways to help them and came up with the idea of the Dine and Donate," Press Cafe lead manager Renee Elfert said. "It was very successful and we couldn't do it without the help of our customers who came in and helped us out. We had a successful week. The event raised a total of $33,200.06. The Press Cafe is located inside the Sewell Ford dealership at Parks Legato Town Center. With this being the first year that Press Cafe has done this event, Elfert said it was tough to say how much they were hoping to raise, but did say the amount still surprised her. "We're very proud of the amount that we've raised," Elfert said. A check signed by the Press Cafe employees was presented to members of Pink the Basin in a ceremony Wednesday at Press Cafe. "All dollars will remain in the Permian Basin and support local women with mammograms, diagnostics, and prosthesis." Members from Pink the Basin had no shortage of praise for the Press Cafe employees and the Sewell family. "I just thank the employees for what they did, because I was here last week and they worked really hard," Pink the Basin board member and breast cancer survivor Letitia Ranke said. "As a breast cancer survivor, they don't know what this means. I saw patients here that are currently going through breast cancer, and just knowing that somebody cares to give back, even in that one moment, it means so much to that individual, and especially Pink the Basin." For Elfert, the $33,200.06 raised for Pink the Basin said a lot about the community's generosity, especially in hard economic times right now. "I think it's awesome and shows that even in times of crisis, our community does come together," Elfert said. "We do try to do our best to help each other. Breast cancer is very prevalent. It touches about every family. This was a great opportunity, and it shows that we're not going to let things like this get us down. We fight together as a community." Sewell Marketing Director Andrew Marshall echoed Elfert's thoughts. "I think it was really incredible the way the community showed up to take part," Marshall said. "As a team member, I was proud to see the cafe and the way that they came up with the idea and executed it to perfection."
We've been reading from the Midland Reporter-Telegram and the Odessa American. Please stay tuned for the weather, followed by the second hour's reading of the newspapers.